You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini. Educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with the Deal Farm Podcast. On today's show, I've got Jared Lichten. Jared, how you doing?
What's going on, Ken? Glad to be here.
Thanks for being on the show. So Jared is actually a fellow podcaster who's got a new podcast out called Flip. Jared, tell us maybe a little bit about your new podcast.
Absolutely, Ken. Basically, I recently quit my job. Very recently. We're recording this on April 16th, 2015. I quit my job on February 6th, so barely 2 months. And I was just really miserable. I was at a big law firm for about 2 years, and I was doing some real estate related stuff. I was doing some oil and gas mineral title examinations and abstracting, stuff like that. Basically, everything you hear about fracking, helping the oil companies drill for oil, giving them legal title to do so, to buy and sell leases and all that beautiful stuff. So I was just not very happy. I was very bored. And on top of that, I was really burnt out because on top of traveling usually a lot, usually Cleveland to Pittsburgh twice a week, not fun, in hotels a lot. Yeah. Put about 50 to 80,000 miles on my car both years working. So it's just a lot of work, and then like 60 hours a week on top of that is just miserable. And I didn't really care at the end how much money I was making. But in reality, the whole time I was doing that, I was flipping houses.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're working, 60 hours a week and finding time to flip houses on the side. That's amazing.
Yeah, maybe sometimes it would be more like a regular 40, 45-hour week. But still, I try to automate a lot of stuff in my business because, as you know, I know you're a blogger on Bigger Pockets, and that's where I started. And when I was in law school, 2011, 2012, learning about flipping houses. And I realized that since I had a good contractor where I lived, and after I took the bar exam, I took the bar exam in Texas where I went to law school and moved back up to Cleveland where I got this job in oil and gas. And I immediately started flipping houses with my contractor. So as you know, it's hard to find good workers, and that was the one asset I did have in the beginning.
So you were originally from Cleveland then?
Yeah, I'm from Cleveland. Technically not born in Kansas City, but moved here when I was two. So huge Cleveland sports fan, takes up a majority of my life.
You're loving the fact that LeBron's back, right?
I have nothing better going on in my life other than my podcast.
That's
playoffs
awesome.
Start soon, so pretty excited about that.
That's awesome. So yeah. So big picture, you went to law school, came out 2 years, worked your tail off, and said, you know what, I just want to be in real estate. And so what, 2 months ago, you quit your great law job and went full-time into flipping houses?
Basically, yeah. I was only doing one house at a time when I was my job, but I realized that I just need to free up my time. I have a very Tim Ferriss-ish kind of attitude toward life, and I definitely did not – you know, my personal relationship suffered with, you know, the people I care about, my family and friends, and it just didn't give me a good work-life balance. So I knew that the real estate investing thing would be a good transition for me.
Well, you did what a lot of people always dream about doing, and that's unplugging from their corporate job and going full-time into real estate. So kudos to you for doing that.
Yeah, and I don't really recommend people reading about real estate for a couple weeks and then doing that. But after I had done it for a couple years as like a side thing, and again, I automated a lot of stuff. So the contractors did all the work and the agents did all the selling kind of thing. I don't recommend anyone just like Jerry Maguire-ing and like totally leaving their job and, you know, making people mad. And I left on good terms. I was just like, hey, man, it's not working out. So that was fine. They were fine. But yeah, I don't recommend doing it right away, but definitely jump on online forums. Ken, you're a blogger on Bigger Pockets. You know how valuable that networking can be. Obviously, finding good contractors and finding other investors. I found that being in that online community of support, first of all, it's free. And you post about like, hey, I'm looking for a deal in Philadelphia, or I'm looking for a deal in New Jersey. Every investor who set up those keyword alerts in New Jersey or whatever, they're going to get those alerts and they can jump in your discussion and say, hey, I've done deals there. Like, this is what's going on there. So the forum's so invaluable for so many reasons, and it allowed me to network and really find other investors to kind of help me and mentor me through my house flipping.
Man, that's fantastic. And so all the properties that you flipped so far, they've been in the Cleveland area?
Northeast Ohio. The house, actually, most of them have been more south toward like Akron. Okay. But yeah, I am very familiar with most of the suburbs up here, and I've been in an area in Akron recently, and that's where I'm looking at picking up another deal, kind of in like a trendier hipster area, like mid-30s, people who have tattoos and dogs and one kid, and it's more accepting areas for all sorts of lifestyles, a lot of elderly people actually. So it's just a cool area to live. Like there's a huge Chipotle, there's like a lot of trendy shopping, and I found that that kind of like old school Victorian colonial kind of home around all those old school kind of trendy shopping areas, they just make everything really hot. And to make to put a cherry on top, they're putting like a huge organic foods market right in the center of the area. The city pumped like $3 million into that area to do a lot of commercial development. And that grocery store, I think, as from an economic standpoint, is very indicative of the people that live in that area.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, if they're putting in like a Whole Foods somewhere, that's probably somewhere you want to start investing if the area is gentrifying.
Absolutely. And I learned in college and some of the finance classes I took that grocery stores are one of the most indicative things of the sociological, socioeconomic standpoint of what kind of people live in those areas.
Sure. Yeah. It sounds like the areas you guys are targeting are transitioning and places are increasing in value. It's a great place to target, sounds like. Now, is that Akron or is that Cleveland?
That's in Northwest Akron.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. You know, I actually did some investing last year myself in Cleveland. I own a handful of rentals up there, and I was amazed at the architecture. I mean, these houses are built in like 20s, 30s, 40s, a lot of square footage, these big front porches, and they're still, I mean, even in decent areas, still ridiculously inexpensive. I mean, some of these houses I'm buying for 30 grand that don't need much work at all, and we're getting 800 in rent. I mean, there are some really good rental opportunities up there.
Yeah, I mean, the Cleveland rental market's been so crazy recently because sometimes you have areas like, I mean, my grandpa grew up in an area that is just like the hood right now, and you definitely would not want to invest there. But that area, maybe a little bit right next to it, has the same area of homes, and that's kind of coming back. So there have been areas that have been blighted that have come back and then been blighted again. There have been areas that have been totally neglected by the city. But the main – I mean, just the economy in Cleveland's taken a turn around since like 2008, 2009 for several reasons. Obviously, the foreclosures kind of got bought up and got – reinvested in and people by people like us. It's a very friendly place for small businesses tax wise to come. It's very low cost of living. Cleveland's very centrally located in between Chicago and New York. The weather hasn't been great lately, but they legalized gambling in 2009.
In the city of Cleveland?
In Ohio.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. Yeah, yep. There's a huge casino downtown called the Horseshoe. I've been there a couple times to play poker and stuff like that. But yeah, there's a big casino in Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Columbus that brings in a lot of tourism, that brings in a lot of money. And in turn, it's actually brought in a lot of restaurants, shopping, stuff like that. So Dan Gilbert, who owns the Cleveland Cavaliers and obviously Quicken Loans, if you're familiar with Detroit, mm-hmm. He has just been like one of the hugest proponents of bringing in billions to the city, and there's a bunch of different commercial development. I could talk forever about the city of Cleveland, but yeah, the rental market there is insane. There's a lot of opportunities still, as Tucker Maryhugh put it, a lot of low-hanging fruit still. So if you're interested in the Cleveland area, it's a good place to be for investing.
So what are the price points of these properties that you're flipping? Are they like starter homes or up-and-coming trendy areas?
I would say, I mean, I've done the gambit. I think the majority of them are priced in between 50 and 100,000. Okay. The one I bought that's the basis for my podcast. And I want to say again, what my podcast is doing is just following along with me while I flip a house, and I kind of go into extreme. I try to give as much as I can as far as extreme detail, all the problems I'm running into as a newbie, kind of teaching, you know, newer investors how to start doing this stuff. But anyways, the one I got now was for 50,000. And I'm putting about 60 into it and hopefully selling it for about 150.
Nice. So would that be your best deal ever, you think, so far, the one you're working on now?
I mean, yeah, like you said before, I think best means a lot to a lot of different people. Some people think that the best deal ever is they learn the most. And I think, yeah, from that stand, I mean, how much have you learned from one of your worst deals?
Hey, well, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. You know, if you look in those terms, yeah, some of my worst deals have been my best deals ever because I got an education on them.
Absolutely. And so my best deal ever, money-wise, is probably going to be this one, maybe hopefully making more than $25,000. And my contractor, I found him on Angie's List before because my contractor I was using before just couldn't travel that far. So this guy is just awesome. You don't have to manage him. He shows up at 7 a.m. with good workers every day. He's just kind of busy because he's good. So I found him. That's part of the fact that this is a good deal. But the fact that I got to launch a podcast on it and that I could really foresee my financial future forward from me quitting my job, it really allowed me to quit because I knew I was going to make money on it.
So let's talk about this deal. Let's delve in a little bit deeper. How did you find the deal? Where did you acquire it?
I actually found it on the MLS. Okay. My mentality is when I look at properties, and maybe it's just a fact that I'm a lawyer and I think that I can negotiate my way in or out of anything. I think that on the MLS, every single price I see is just what the seller thinks it can sell for. That's what the list price is. It's like why you don't rely on the market properties to comp. It's because it's just some dude or some person guessing what they can get the property for, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, yeah. So I look at that price as just like, hey, I got to ask the agent what the seller's situation is. And that's what I say in my podcast. A really good tactic you can do is just get as close to the seller's ear as you can. Literally yesterday I called an agent. I'm just like, hey, can you just ask the other agent if I can speak to the seller alone? Because I wanted to see if they were up for some seller financing on this deal because I really want to get it. And I know it's a probate property and I'm the only person interested. But back to my deal, I was trying to get as close to the seller's ear as possible, trying to understand their situation. It was listed at $99,000 on the MLS. It looked like it needed a lot of TLC. I went and saw it with my contractor. We knew it was going to need at least 50, 55 in work. And I knew I wasn't going to make money unless I bought it for around 50, 55,000. And I knew I could sell it for a lot. It was a beautiful over 2,000 square foot colonial. It had beautiful wood trim that had been custom and put in there, which people in Akron love.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and these trendy areas, people just like eat that stuff up. It's and we're putting a wet bar in there, just like little tiny finishes that you can really check off and I guess counteract the fact that it either doesn't have a garage or that it has a small backyard or something like that. So I could talk about house flipping all day. But anyway, so it was listed at 99. I saw that it was kind of in the back of my mind as a good deal, and they reduced to 85. So me and my contractor looked again. And I'm like, okay, get prepared. It's only business. I can only offer this. So I made a spreadsheet of all my costs I was going to have, and I offered the agent $42,000. Wow. Yeah, and it's a huge spread from 85, but I was pretty honest with them. Their house had been on the market for a while, and you'll see this with a lot of probate properties, or at least if it's kids of someone who died. I know their emotions are tied into the house, whether they grew up there or whether they have, you know, they love their parents, obviously, but I say just business, like this is how much I can financially offer. It's all I can afford. And they came back at something like 68 or 70. And I told the agent, I was just like, look, they're out-of-state probate sellers. There's no mortgage on the property. So whatever they're getting is going to be cash. And I want the house. So we just got to be able to come to a deal. So I said, I'm sorry, 68 is just nothing. I can't work with that. So I didn't even counter that. And about 3 weeks later, it was a Friday. I was still working at this point. And the agent called me at almost 5 p.m. I could tell it was probably a stressful week for these sellers. And again, this is 3 weeks after I had last talked to her and offered her 42. As she said, they'll take 50.
Wow.
So
patience. You just, you know, waited until they came down. They felt the pain long enough and really ended up dropping their price in half from 99 down to 50. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, and it's tough for people selling a house, but you got to look at it from your perspective too. I tell agents, I pretty much say, hey, they should have taken better care of their house. Like, who has a leaky roof, no central air, and like no cosmetic updates and like bad electric? Like, just take better care of your house. I'll pay more money for it. You know,
yeah, sure. So now you're in the process of putting what, 60 grand in repairs and upgrades?
Yeah, yeah, I've paid about 25. We found out about halfway through that we definitely have to waterproof the basement, so that was like another 4,500. But at the same time, we're going to avoid doing a couple other things like dry locking the walls in the basement. So ultimately, it's more like $2,000 or $3,000 more rather than $5,000 more. So that'll totally make the end buyer happy, the fact that they know there's not any water intruding in the basement. But yeah, I'm in the middle of a $60,000 rehab and paid about $25,000.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. And you feel pretty confident then you'll be able to turn around and sell it at $150,000 when you're all done?
Yeah, yeah. And to tell the truth, I actually I threw it up on Zillow a couple days ago for like $165,000 just to get some interest. I like putting properties for free. I mean, it's totally free to list a property for sale by owner. I like to generate some interest with agents initially, because even if an agent can bring you a buyer, that's a 3-2 split rather than like a 6-4 split.
Sure.
For anyone listening, obviously, it's just paying 6%. On the first 100,000 and 4% on the balance, as opposed to when you sell it by yourself and an agent brings you a buyer, it's standard 3% on the first 100,000 and 2% on the balance. So if I can garner some interest and then I can have a couple price drops to keep myself up at the top of the MLS, by the time we're done finishing the remodel, then we should have a decent amount of interest or hopefully a buyer.
Yeah, man, fantastic.
Yep.
Sounds like a, I mean, well, I know this isn't your first flip, but sounds like, is this going to be your highest grossing flip to date, you think?
Yeah, most likely, unless we really can't sell for $150,000. I really think we can, because there's like an identical house down the street that sold for $145,000 like a year ago, and the cosmetic updates weren't even as good as we're doing them. So we trick out the house and usually people will pay for it.
Well, and you're coming right into the selling season too. We're finding right now that things are really, really picking up in our market. We're putting stuff on the MLS and getting multiple offers. You probably have a little bit of a delay in Cleveland. Once the snow thaws out, it's probably when things pick up there. And you'd mentioned too, something kind of funny before we jumped on the podcast, that you'd bought it, I guess it was it covered in a foot of snow when you actually bought the house?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I didn't realize how skinny the driveway was, because when I bought the house, there was a foot and a half of snow on the ground. And when I agreed to it, and even when I closed a month later, cause I got a conventional loan just cause I didn't really have that much cash to work with, I noticed that there was still a foot of snow on the ground when I closed. So I didn't even know about this until like a month ago.
That's, I guess, one of the pitfalls of investing in Cleveland in any time in the winter.
Exactly.
You don't really see your yard until everything thaws out.
Yeah. Roofs have shorter lifetime. Concrete has shorter lifetime. I think it does play into our benefit though, as an investor though. So Ken, if you had, say hypothetically, if in Atlanta it got extremely cold from December to March, don't you think it would be a lot easier to pick up more properties in November because no one wants to pay the utilities through the wintertime?
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, that's a thought.
So investors are in a certain good situation in cold weather areas toward like October, November, because sellers get desperate and they know that they can't sell their house for as much in the winter.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, Jared, tell us a little bit more about the podcast and where people can find you.
So basically, the podcast is geared toward newer amateur real estate investors like myself. I consider myself still a newbie at this point, even though I've been a couple of years. It follows me through my house I'm flipping. But at the same time, once a week, I interview someone that allows me to demonstrate one aspect of house flipping. So, for instance, on Monday and Tuesday, I have an episode coming out with Jay Scott of Bigger Pockets, who's another pros pro moderator on there like you. He is a house flipper who's going to explain with me how to estimate rehab costs. So that's going to be an entire, actually two-parter. So I have to split it up because we talked about so much awesome stuff. But that's my podcast. It's just called Flip on iTunes. All you have to do is find me, Flip on iTunes. I have a website too, where you can look at pictures of the remodel and kind of follow me. I blog a little bit. My website is flipjl.com. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Jared Lichten. If you can't spell it, all the links are on my website, flipjl.com. And that's pretty much it. Awesome. I appreciate you having me on, Ken.
Man,
it's been
Jared,
awesome.
This is a great interview. I appreciate you being on. Again, the podcast is called Flip. You can search for them on iTunes. And the website is flipjl.com. Thanks again for being on the show, Jared.
Thank you so much, Ken.
All right. Take care, man.
See ya.
Hey, Deal Farm Podcast listeners, this is Ken Corsini with a special offer. In an effort to get our podcast off the ground and as much traction as possible, we have a favor to ask. And in return, we're going to give you a free t-shirt. That's right, a free Deal Farm Podcast t-shirt mailed directly to your address. We just ask you to do five simple things to help us get this thing off the ground. Number one, if you would subscribe to us in iTunes. Number two, if you would like our page in Facebook. Number three, if you would share our page in Facebook. And number four, if you would follow us on Twitter. And lastly, number five, if you would download all of our episodes in iTunes. So initially, we're going to have between 30 to 40 episodes when we launch the podcast. We would just ask that you download all of those episodes through iTunes. So once you do that, just send us an email to offers@dealfarm.net. Give us your name, your address, and your t-shirt size, and we will mail you a free t-shirt. Now, all of that said, we don't necessarily have a way to know if you downloaded all of our episodes, so some of this is on the honor system. We're going to trust that if you say you downloaded all of them, that you actually downloaded all of them. And when you do all five of those things, again, real quick, if you would subscribe through iTunes, like our Facebook page, share our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and download our episodes through iTunes, we will send you a free t-shirt. Thanks so much, and I hope you take advantage of this free offer.